Get on with it, Macca.
Hello, Macca. It's Shane.
G'day, Shane.
I live on a mountain near Sawtell on the north coast of New South Wales. I just wanted to describe the dawn to you. The sun's coming up behind the cloud on the horizon, and it's backlighting all the cloud. And the cloud immediately above me looks like the Golden Fleece.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of rain up here. Not volumes, but lots of showers.
Yeah. There's a bit of rain coming too around the place too, certainly on the east coast. Hello, there's the rooster. But certainly in the south coast of New South Wales, I think they're going to cop it.
Yeah, it looks threatening here, but it doesn't sort of eventuate, although there's lots of cumulus on the eastern horizon. Yeah. It's a really nice storm.
Yeah, that's nice. We've had a lot of rain, I reckon. I don't know how much rain we've had, and in terms of, I was still fascinated by those couple of callers talking about rain in other times and core samples that scientists from various universities have done to tell us what was happening 100, 200, 300, 500, 1,000, 2,000 years ago. And one of them said that one of the theories was that we've had the last 100 years at least has been wetter than, you know... Keep quiet. The last 100 years or so has been wetter than, it was before that. So I don't know. It seems, you know, who knows? Who knows how much rain we've had in the last 100 years and whether that's, but it's interesting. It just seems wet. It just seems, I suppose, because the last couple of years we've had a lot of rain, except, of course, in Perth where they're dry as a chip.
Yeah, I was just reading this morning about where they think our water come from. We probably got collided by meteors that were all water. Yeah, it's quite interesting. We're supposed to be having a drought now, but the drought's long gone.
Exactly, yeah. The drought's long gone. Anyway, who knows?
A really nice morning. Yeah.
All right, well... Nice to talk to you, Shane, living on the mountain there at Sawtell. How long have you lived there?
40 years, Macca.
Mm.
I grew up in Sawtell and moved out here 40 years ago. But, I live with five roosters.
Why five?
Yeah, what's the saying now? I didn't think it through.
But why five? Why did you five roosters?
They were raised in an incubator, and a girlfriend left them with me for a couple of weeks while she went horse riding, came back, and of course they grew from something that could sit in your hand to something that was running around. They went back home, and about 4 months later she said that they'd all grown into roosters and could they come and live at my place? I thought, oh, yeah, I remember them. They were pretty cute little things. When they came back, they were half grown up, and they've been here ever since. Yeah, they run the place. Yeah.
Because you're out in the bush, nobody complains about... Because you can't have roosters in the city, I don't think, in the suburbs.
No, they get up pretty early. They beat the lyrebirds up this morning and the kookaburras. Yeah, but they carry on for a fair while, and then they start annoying me to come out and do something with them.
There you go. All right, Shane.
Yeah. Righto.
Good on you, mate. Nice to talk to you.
Okay. See you, Macca.
See you, mate. Bye.
Good morning, Macca. It's Liz here and my husband, Jared, and we've just left the Pilliga Boar Baths. And I thought you might like to know, we were there overnight and it was all lovely and dry, lots of us campers, free nomads, and it started to rain. And I said to my husband about 11 p.m, maybe we should move. No, it'll be fine. Come the morning, a lot of us were bogged. So it started with us getting ourselves out of the bog. We didn't need any help, which was due to Jared. But we had a good hour and a half, 2 hours entertainment, watching the mobile homes and caravans being tandem towed out of this lake of water.
Wow. Well, it makes life exciting, I suppose, Liz.
Well, it did, and you should have heard the cheering. And you talk about how many men does it take to put a light bulb in. Mm. You should have seen how many men it took to organise a tow, you know, to tow these guys out.
But the blokes, they love it. They love a challenge.
Oh, they do.
They love a challenge. God, it's like they love watering the lawn. Rang me. She said watering the lawn. She said, Ian, I think it's a bloke thing. And I said, yeah, a bit like fiddling with the channel changer.
Absolutely.
But you give them a challenge like this, and because life can be pretty mundane, really, Liz, as you know.
Oh, yes.
And something like this happens, and hooray, they're all of a sudden they're doing what they were meant to do. They're meant to saving, you know, life and limb,
yes.
and there they are, and here we are, and we've done that, and by God, look
at
that.
They came out of the baths, they came out of their caravans, and there they all were in huddles talking and giving advice. It was good to see, let me tell you.
So, Liz, you're on the road, are you? Sort of.
Well, we're actually what you call homeless because we're having a townhouse built and it won't be ready for another 6 months at least. So if you've got a couch, we can make good use of it.
Oh, right. Have you got a mobile home? No, you've got a four-wheel drive.
Oh, we've got something called a pod camper. It's very small, can't stand up in it.
Mm.
But it goes anywhere and everywhere. So we're on our way up to Cairns for the second time.
Uh-huh.
And get away from that cold Melbourne weather.
And where's your townhouse being built?
Oh, in Cranbourne South, down in Victoria.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we might be in Cairns in a month. So
well, we'll be there. We'll listen out for you.
Yeah, we'll come. We'll do an outside broadcast.
Absolutely,
with a bit of luck, and if it rains, you can pull us out of the bog.
Shall do. Shall do.
Oh, all right, Lizzie. Nice to talk
to you. Anyway,
so
love your show.
Thank you. Everybody's out of the bog, are they? Or
oh, they're all out. Yes. And some smart person came up with the idea, they just arrived and they said, why did they all park there? Well, of course, we were quick to say there was no water here. It was all dry. I think they had about 100 mil overnight.
Oh, dear, yes. There's a lot of rain around,
Yes.
Lovely area out in the Pilliga, except when it rains.
Beautiful. Have you been to Burren Junction too?
I've been through Burren. I haven't sort of stopped and said g'day, but I could.
Well, Burren Junction, they've got the baths as well, and they're probably my favourite.
Oh, right.
Really, really good, yeah.
And it's good for the everything, is it? Good for the arthritis or whatever?
Oh, it's wonderful. You come out of there feeling like you're 20 again, but it doesn't take long to go back to 75, let me tell you.
Good on you, Liz.
Okay, bye.
Alexander's in Maryborough. Good morning, Alexander.
Morning, Maka, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Yeah, the weather here in Maryborough is all right. It's, you know, never a bad sunset, but all the clouds have cleared up a little bit. I'm driving up to Rocky this morning for Beef Week.
Oh, that's right. That starts today, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does start today. I'm a chef, so I'm taking a lot of my kitchen team up there, showing them around. Hopefully all learn something, you know, a little bit professional, a little bit personal development for everyone.
Yeah, that'd be great. So you're actually cooking for people or you're just going up there as a demonstration or what?
We're just going up to have a look. We haven't got anything booked in to cook for anyone officially.
Mm.
More just, you know, I've got my apprentice coming up and cooks and all that. So we just want to, you know, get them around and hopefully we all learn something.
Yeah, well, there'll be a lot of people. It's always nice when there's a lot of people around you and there's lots of things to do and lots of people to meet and you always learn something, don't you?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a fool because I'm driving up there all flying, but no, it's been beautiful. Left at maybe 3 o'clock this morning and plan to get there by 10-ish. Should be picking them up from the airport and getting straight to it, I guess.
And Alex, you're a chef in Rocky, are you?
I'm a chef in Brisbane.
All right.
Yeah, the Queensland Cricketers Club.
I see. And how long have you been doing that?
Been a chef for, my goodness, maybe 8 years now. I've been at where I am now for almost two.
And you're in demand, aren't you, chefs?
Sorry?
Chefs are in demand.
Man, my goodness. It just seems everywhere's in demand at the moment. I get a new job offer every other week. Brisbane's screaming out for chefs.
Yeah, lots of people, and they all need to eat. And it seems these days, when I grew up, your mother always made your meals at home. You mostly ate at home, and once or maybe once every 2 weeks you went out for a meal somewhere. But no, mostly you ate home. But now that's been turned on its head, I suppose, because we're busier. I don't know, Alex. You might have worked it out, but we all eat out now, don't we?
Yeah, I'm always surprised. I'm very lucky because my mum and dad cook, so I'm quite lucky because I grew up in that eating at home. But yeah, I'm surprised how many people eat out all the time. It's you get the same people through the restaurant 2-3 times a week if they're quite regular.
Mm. And yeah. I think it's a time thing, and also I don't know what my mum was a home economics teacher. They used to call it home economics or cooking teacher, but she could cook very well. She'd done nutrition and all that sort of stuff. So, but I'm not sure that I can't cook to save me. I can do a roast. I'm quite good at a roast and a spag bowl if you push me. But that's about it, Alex. And I'm sure, we don't cook as well. Yeah, maybe that's one of the reasons too.
No, I'm quite lucky. My mum and dad are fantastic cooks. Sort of just followed the family, and my great granddad was a chef as well. So, been passed down, I guess.
Runs in the family, Alexander. Have a great time at the Rocky Beef Week. I wish I was going to go there. I should get on a plane and just head there. That goes all week, does it? Go from what, Monday? Today it starts, doesn't it, I think?
Yeah, today till next Saturday, but don't quote me on that one. Maybe next Sunday.
Yeah. All right. Good on you, Alex. Have a good time.
Easy. Cheers, Macca.
See you, mate. Bye. Kieran Kelly, good morning, mate.
Good morning, Ian.
How are you?
I'm good. You may not be aware, but yesterday the Lake Argyle swim was held 18 years after you flew over our little boat.
We did.
With Dick Smith.
Oh, yeah.
And it's grown into an extraordinary event. I started the public swim the year after in 2007, and they sat 700 people down for dinner last night. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know if you remember the little barbecue we went to after the initial swim across the lake in 2006. I think there were 16 people, and you sang the Pegram Brothers song, Another Night in Broome.
Another Night in Broome, yeah.
So it certainly turned into, and I want to thank the people of Kununurra for embracing it. People come from all over the world now. Famous swimmers have been in it. Ian Thorpe's been in it. It's turned into a big public event in Western Australia, all from me saying to Jim Hughes, who helped me on the swim. He said, did you enjoy it? This is the 2006 swim. And I said, yeah, I did. Why don't we do it as a public swim? And he said, oh, nobody would ever come. They're not going to come all the way to Kununurra. He said, we might get a few from Perth, but no one would come from Sydney or Melbourne. I said, mate, they'd come from all over the world. Well, the following year, when I'd worked with the Kununurra Chamber of Commerce and the Shire, and they said, well, look, we're not going to do this unless you guarantee to bring 20 swimmers. And I thought, that'll be easy. And I got 30. Okay. And now you have to go on a ballot.
Really?
Yeah, you have to go on a ballot, and the ballot closes in a couple of minutes.
Wow, isn't that amazing?
It is.
It's a bit like the Dick Smith story. When Dick started the Variety Club Bash, he said, well, let's have a bash and raise some money. And they raised some money, and then they said, and Tony Hasham and others said, why don't we do this every year? And Dick said, well, you can do it. I'm not going to be part of it because I've got other things to do. But, yeah, go for it. So they did it, and this is a bit like that.
Well, yes, and the people of Kununurra embraced it. That's the main thing. And we took three teams went up from the Balmoral Beach Club this year. None of them had been to the Kimberleys before, and they just had a wonderful time swimming in a big lake that's warm. Mm. The Carboid Range.
Fresh water.
The fresh water. You can drink it. They said, what do you do for water? I said, you drink as you swim along. Oh, really? I'm not sure if I could do that. So
and say g'day to the freshies.
Yeah, the Sydney people are a bit worried about those freshwater crocodiles. I try to convince them that it's their cousins you've got to worry about.
The leather undertakers, oh, yeah, as you called them. But, yeah, it's a bit like you and the Dusky Whalers. anyway, so, well, that's great. We should, yeah, when I hear of a great crowd of people together, I love to go there because you can just point your microphone and start talking. And
well, apparently the dinner there, they get 700 to 750 people each year. It's the largest sit-down dinner, I think, in Western Australia. Uh-huh. That's a lot of catering. I said, what was the food like? They all rang me from the dinner last night.
Oh, right.
And they were all having an uproarious time, the Balmoral Beach Club
and
people.
Said, why aren't you there?
Yeah. and I said, what's the food like? And they said, oh, it's great. So they've loved it.
I suppose it'd be like a barbie and coleslaw and stuff, I suppose.
I don't know. It's a sit-down dinner.
What, with formal sort of thing, like roasts and things?
Or... I don't know. But
no. Anyway, yeah.
Ours was pretty informal, the one that you sang at.
So it'll probably be the morning after the night before now today, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it could be.
A few sore heads and stuff like that. So the swim you did, now it's a shorter swim now, isn't it? Or
ours was 61 kilometres and went straight across the lake from south to north, from the sort of pondage down the southern end where the Ord River flows in. But now they stay further to the north, and the maximum length is 20 kilometres.
Uh-huh.
So ours was 61. It took us 2.5 days to do it.
Yeah, I remember I was on the boat. I didn't do any swimming, but I was on the boat. It was nice. And I remember flying over, and I said, there they are. And you could see it out in the middle. Yeah, there you go.
It's a big piece of water.
I'm talking to Kieran Kelly. I'll talk to him in a minute, but I'll talk to you. Our number's 1300-700-222, wherever you are. I'd love to talk to you. G'day, this is Macca.
Hey, Macca.
Hi.
Oh, hello. It's Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
I'm just ringing from Waterhouse Conservation Area in northwest Tasmania. Northeast, sorry.
Well, tell us about it.
In the water.
I know nothing of it. Tell us about the Waterhouse Conservation Area.
It's beautiful. A lot of camping around here. I'm looking out at the Bass Strait and over to Waterhouse Island. I've got a fish in the line. I've been here for about 5 days. Caught a fish every day, but this morning I don't know yet. Had a few good bites.
So what are you doing there? Kathy, are you on holes or what are you doing?
Yeah, I've been touring around Tasmania for about 4.5 months now.
Four and a half months?
Yeah. came over to tick a bucket list item, going to the Sydney to Hobart yacht race and watching the boats come in and before Christmas. That was pretty awesome. And, yeah, I've just been touring around Tassie ever since. Uh-huh. Just heading to the warmer side of Tassie now, up to the beach and
getting some sunshine. Is there a warmer side, is there?
There is a little bit warmer side, yeah. When the sun comes out, just watching it come up over the hill now, the water's a bit cool. You hop in for a swim, but you don't linger.
No.
It's beautiful.
So how do you get 4.5 months off? That's what I want to know.
Well, I've been on the road for nearly 2 years. Be 2 years in June. I've just decided to buy a Sprinter van, sell my house, and travel while I still can. I'll go back to reality and work one day, but in the meantime, this is it.
What do you do?
I've done a bit of everything, but I was care assistant working in community care. I've been an underground miner. I've been a bus driver, all sorts. Wow. But now it's time for me.
Time for me. And you enjoyed the last 4.5 months?
Oh, it's just, Tassie's just magnificent. I just call it the gift that keeps on giving. It's just beautiful. There's so much around and it's so different from the west side to the east and in the middle where it's freezing. I've seen a couple of auroras, the Aurora Australis, while I've been here, which has just been incredible.
It makes you feel you're alive when you see a natural phenomenon like that, isn't it? Or a water spout or, you know, just something that you don't see every day and you think, my God.
No, just buzzing all day after seeing those. It's just incredible.
I'll say.
Yeah. I just thought I'd ring up and...
Well, that's made us all restless. Thanks very much for that, Kathy.
Oh, my pleasure. If I can help anyone get out there, do it.
This is the All Over News. And this story from another time, a VC winner, Paddy Bugden, in the First World War. I came across this yarn in Alstonville, Northern New South Wales. I'm talking to John Barnes and Brian Partridge. John, g'day.
Good morning, Macca. Lovely to be here.
You've written a book about a bloke called Paddy Bugden, VC, and the book's called So I Fear Nothing. What's the impetus of the title?
They were words taken from a letter, one of the last letters he wrote to his mother before he was killed. And he explained the conditions of trench life and the dangers.
This is First World War?
First World War, yes, 1917. And then he finished the letter off saying that in spite of all that, I still fear nothing. And he went on to win a VC and got killed in the process.
How did you find out about him?
My mother went to the same school as him, a few years behind him. But when he won the VC, there was a ceremony at the school, a little country school called Gundarimba, near Lismore in New South Wales. The school is long closed. The function was chaired by my mum's father, my grandfather. And there was quite a ceremony and a lot of dignitaries from the district. The function was mentioned in the school magazine. And when Mum told me about it as a kid, I found the school magazine among her possessions and the story was earmarked. And that stirred me to write the book on Paddy.
Brian, you're with the local RSL here.
The Allsville RSL sub-branch and our connection with Paddy. The 2 years before he enlisted to go to World War One, he lived in the Federal Hotel here at Allsville because his mother owned the hotel at that stage. So that's one of the reasons that Allsville sort of claims him as our own, although he lived in other couple of other places before that. But he was very popular in Allsville. He was a good sportsman. But then he went to Brisbane to enlist in the army. The Allsville RSL sub-branch first established a memorial to Paddy just after the Second World War. His memorial is in Bugden Avenue, and there's also, opposite the Federal Hotel, there is a lane, which is also called Bugden Lane.
It seems to, when looking at this, So I Fear Nothing, it seems almost a foolhardy thing to say, doesn't it? I mean, it's, I don't know, it's either courageous or foolhardy in some ways. I don't know. Have you thought about that?
Well, having read the letter that John's got in the book there, it sort of fits it because he felt that he lived a good life without too many misdemeanours, and he probably accepted the fact, well, if there's high casualties here, but if I do get killed, it didn't worry him. He fears nothing because he lived a good life.
Surrounded by it, I suppose.
Correct. And the VC was won as a result of a series of exploits over several days. So what I mean, his blood was up and he just kept going. And that's the surprising part about it all.
And have you written other books, John?
No, one and only. A lot of late nights and a lot of research. But good fun.
And a great tribute to a bloke like Paddy Bugden. Nice to talk to you, John.
Thank you.
Brian, you too.
Thank you, Mac. Good luck, mate.
Last week on the program, we were talking about quilts and textiles, and I mentioned Morley Granger, who I'd met in Toowoomba some years ago. And I was delighted to get this email during the week. Hi Ian, I heard my name mentioned last Sunday regarding my quilts and the small embroidery piece titled Night Sky I made for you decades ago. I'm delighted you continue to enjoy it, and I do, Morley. She says, I have fantastic news. By way of background, I began making self-contained touring exhibition packages in 1993. The first one was titled In Praise of Australian Women, and I remember bringing a piece of one of the installations with me into the ABC studio in Toowoomba to support our on-air chat when we did the program. I think it was 1995 or 96. Since then, I've produced 9 more thematic exhibitions that have toured to 60 East Coast venues. Exhibition videos, 29 in all, are my legacy project. It's quite unusual for an Australian artist to create, promote, manage, and tour their own work that is not for sale, without financial assistance from an arts or philanthropic institution. On the basis of my novel approach to surviving as a narrative visual artist, in 2002 I was awarded a Churchill Fellowship to visit artists living and working similarly in the UK and the USA. But I digress, says Morley Granger. Back to the fantastic news. As the end of my career loomed, I wondered what would become of my oeuvre, and the search began for an organisation willing to take custodianship of my work. The search has gone on for years with no luck, until recently when an approach to the Australian Cultural Library met with success. Super fast off the mark, the crates were picked up from storage and taken to the ACL, that's the Australian Cultural Library, in Rosewood, an hour or so from Toowoomba. At this early stage, I understand the ACL plans to exhibit 1 Morley Granger exhibition per year, using same as an educational tool, a fantastic outcome for all concerned. Now I can settle into the next phase of my life. To date, I've been asked to mentor emerging artists and to become patron of the Toowoomba Spinners, Weavers and Dyers Group. It appears I've seamlessly transitioned into eldership. However, I'll continue to make art, albeit on a smaller scale. None of this would have been possible without the community's support I've received over decades as I endeavoured to make meaningful artworks telling our stories of both hardship and success. Without their ongoing help in a myriad of forms, my quest to make contemporary textile art about us in all our complexity would have come to naught. Thank you for the part you've played in keeping the Morley Granger Show on the road, says Morley Granger. This is the All Over News, and I received a number of missives about the passing of LJ Hill, who was a singer-songwriter. Firstly, Simon Scott says, you've played the song Pretty Bird Tree, sung by Armidale musician LJ Hill, on your show a number of times. He passed away a couple of weeks ago. LJ was born with Cherokee, Irish blood and Aboriginal blood, and he was an incredible songwriter and singer, releasing Inside the Universe and Namoi Mud, which included the sad but beautiful Pretty Bird Tree. LJ hailed from the northwestern plains of New South Wales and lived and played his music in Armidale for many years. Thank you, Simon. And this from Dallas Muirhead. Macker, I'm writing to share some remembrances of LJ Hill with you. My name is Dallas Muirhead, and I was LJ's right-hand man, as far as music goes, for probably half a dozen years or more. Back then, my main instrument was the slide guitar, which is how I ended up playing with him. I reckon he loved the slide guitar more than any other instrument. LJ was one of those blokes who could pretty much literally turn his hand to anything. By all accounts, a top-class footballer and rodeo rider, he was also an incredible instinctive sculptor. I saw firsthand his amazing horse sculptures. He told the story of how he made a sculpture of Muhammad Ali that ended up becoming a prized possession of the boxer. And, of course, his songwriting, at its best, was peerless. I reckon the reason he could accomplish so many different things in a way that seemed so natural was because he was always looking to learn, always looking for a new or better way of doing things. This way of being has its pluses and minuses, and I reckon sometimes it might have caused him to overlook the brilliance of his songs just as they were. When we played gigs, it was just usually me and him, and we sometimes disagreed on how much I should play. I mostly wanted to play less, out of fear of ruining something that was already pretty perfect, and he mostly wanted more, something new. Sometimes when he was working on a new song, he would call me for feedback on the music and I would give it to him. But one day he called me over and we sat on the veranda and he played me three songs, one of which was The Pretty Bird Tree. I had nothing to say about those songs. I was pretty much speechless. His songwriting had gone to an incredible new level, and thankfully it brought him worldwide recognition and acclaim. He couldn't have been prouder when his album got top reviews in both the national papers. He was also rightly stoked when Glenn Hansard and Marketa Urglova saw him play at Bluesfest and flew him down to Sydney and brought him on stage during the middle of their sold-out Sydney Opera House show to sing. He had one of those lives where you see the penthouse and the S-house. No wonder he had so many stories. Thanks, Macca, says Dallas Muirhead.
He tells stories so grand of this vast, timeless land, and they call it Sunday with Macca.
Hi, Macca. This is Mac here, and I'm going to talk about Anzac Day.
Where are you, Mac?
Tugan. On Anzac Day, I marched with my granddad, and I had my great-granddad's miniature medals on, and I recited a poem in Flanders Field in front of more than 21 people.
You little possum. Do you want? How old are you, Mac?
Eight.
So do you want to recite in Flanders Field for us now, or is that too much pressure? Or
no. In Flanders Field, where the poppies blow, between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky, the larks, still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below, we are the dead, short days ago, we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders Field. Take up our quarrel with the foe, to you from failing hands we throw. The torch be yours, to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep though poppies grow in Flanders Field.
You're a little champion, Mac. You want to come in here one morning and work with me? Were you a bit nervous in front of all those people?
Not really.
Hmm?
Yeah, I even made my granddad cry.
Well, grandads will do that. All right, Mac, good on you, mate.
Thanks, Macca.
But Australians all know, if you're rich or you ain't got a cracker. They tell stories so grand of this vast, timeless land, and they call it Sunday with Macca. They all call it Sunday with Macca. Yeah, they all call it Sunday with Macca. Get on with it, Macca.
I will. Good morning and welcome. That'll set you back on your heels. That's little Mac. You'll find Mac on our podcast. You can get the podcast every week. You can go back and find things from our program on the podcast. That was little Mac. What a little ripper. He said, he said I was in front of 21 people and it made me granddad cry. But I said that'll happen. My guest this morning, Kieran Kelly. Good morning, Kieran.
Hello, Ian.
How are you going? Kieran's been talking about all sorts of things and all of it this morning. Shane was in Sawtell. He just wanted to tell me the vision of the sun coming up, but he's got five roosters. Don't know why. He couldn't really explain that. Liz and Gerard were at the Boar Baths at Pilliga, and she said they went to bed last night and they said, oh, it's going to rain. No, it'll be right. And then this morning there's a whole pile of nomads and et cetera there at the Pilliga because apparently it's good for your, you know, bad necks if you've got a bad neck, duh, and all that sort of stuff in your knees. And she said, Liz said, yes, it's great. She said, you get in there and she said, you come out feeling like you're 21 again. She said, but after about an hour, you go back to feeling 75. Yeah, and it rained and they're all bogged. So they had there's all these blokes. Can you imagine all the blokes getting people out of bog? Yeah, hey, come on, Frank, now, yeah. Get that. I'll get, you know, they love it. Blokes love a chance to sort of excel because they live lives of quiet desperation. You just wander around and, yeah, got the petrol. It was, you know, 240 a litre or whatever. But when they can get their hands on something like, yes, Frank and Tom and Bill and Derek and they're all bogged. So we'll have to, you got any rope? No, away they go. So that's what's happening in the Pilliga this morning. Alexander was in Maryborough heading to the Rocky Beef Week. Mike was in Rocky. Our weatherman told us all about the rain that's coming in various places. Angela Lathurius was in Amiens, France, from Bundaberg. She said a profound experience. She got a couple of uncles there. Len was in Caloundra. Kathy was in the conservation area in the near Lonnie and telling us that she was sort of she's been on the road for 4.5 months. And in the meantime, Kieran's been telling us about when he rowed ashore at Gallipoli. It was rowed ashore by the Turkish fishing boat. And in a minute, I want to talk about bringing our boys home. I'll talk about it now. I have this, because of Antec, we get all sorts of, and I had this email from John Lagaway, and he says, it's a long email, but he says, after 109 years, our men still lay under a foreign Turkish sky in a soil that has they had no longing for, dudley dudley dum. None of our Gallipoli battlefield dead were returned. Australian soldiers died in the battlefields of World War One and were buried in the country where they fell or at sea. He's basically saying bring him home, like the song from Les Mis that Normie wrote. That's not feasible, is it? Not possible. A lot of those graves that you were talking about and the mothers and they're not there because a lot of the bodies just disappeared, I suppose, didn't they? That, you know,
and they would have. The headstones are there, but if you look at the task in front of you, you've got the Western Front, you've got Gallipoli, and you've also got the Kokoda Track. Now, if you just take one of those cemeteries, Bamana Cemetery at the start of the Kokoda Track, that's a vast cemetery. And I think I believe in rest in peace.
Mm.
If you look at those soldiers in the next cemetery, for example, they're there with their mates. They're there with men a lot of their age. And there's something very collegiate about coming up Walker's Ridge and coming into the next cemetery and seeing these Australians there that were joined in common purpose and all died together. Now, that might seem a bit strange, but to exhume them and then spread them all over the place, I think you lose the historical connection between them all. And it would be a vast job. And it would, there's something, the Kokoda Track in Gallipoli, there's something very Australian about them. And I think the war graves are integral to that sense of
us.
Us, yeah, us. I mean, myself and my daughter Hilary, when we were at Gallipoli, we felt we were amongst Australians. And when my sister Fiona and I did the Kokoda track, it was much the same. Here's a little piece of Australia. Now, it's in a foreign country, yes, but it's a little piece of Australia because Australians fought here, they died here, they laughed here, they had a smoko here, they made fun of their officers. There's something very Australian about both those places that I think would be lost if you bring all those guys home.
Oh, you couldn't. I don't think you'd do it anyway, but I remember talking to Ray Parkin. Ray Parkin was on the Perth, and he wrote that trilogy about his time in the Perth and about being sunk. The Perth was sunk in 42, I think, and then I was prisoner of war, and he's written a trilogy of that. But he also wrote the book about the Endeavour.
Yeah, he did, the two-volume one.
Yeah, great stuff. But at the time, I spoke to him when I was at ABC Melbourne, and at the time I think they were searching for the Sydney off the coast of Western Australia. And we were talking, he said, look, it should be left alone.
Yeah, I agree. It's a tomb.
And it's a war grave, and that's it. And you don't want to be disturbing any of that.
No.
Well, that was his, and he's a midshipman and a very bright little person too, I'll tell you.
Well, when we did the Kokoda track, I was often asked at various sites to give a bit of an interpretation and read a poem. And one of the poems I read was by a bloke called Sapa Bert Beros, and it's called The Crosses on the Track. And I mean, these are very sad poems, but the crosses on the track at Kokoda, they're kind of all part of it. So you diminish the sacrifice of those blokes in some way if you were to erase them from the scene of their...
Yeah, I think so too, yep. I'll talk to you. I'll continue to talk. I've got lots of things to talk to Kieran about. But we'll talk to you. 1300 700 222. Give us a ring. Love to talk to you. Mostly it ends up on the podcast. You listen to the podcast? Obviously,
I do.
You do.
Yeah.
G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah, hello, Macca.
G'day.
Hello.
Yeah, g'day. How are you?
Hello. Can you?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Macca. It's John Brady.
I can hear you, John. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we're at Macca. We're at Bendleby Ranges, about 50 kilometres out of Uluru.
Uluru.
Yeah. we're at the station we're staying on out here. There's about 91 of us. We're doing a 10-day horse trek. We do it every year at different areas. Previous years, like we've done it in Victoria and New South Wales and that. Sort of the ride started back in about 1986, so it's been a long dated event as such. And each year we pick another destination. We've got a committee that run it, and we raise money. Uh-huh. This year we're raising money for the Royal Flying Doctors Service, and some other parties. The club that's running it this year is the Riverland and Mallee Trail Horse Riding Club, which is ATHRA affiliated. But as I said, we're raising money for Flying Doctors, Variety South Australia, and the local bowling club. And not only are we here, because we're here for 10 days, not only are we here at the moment, we've also got the Variety Club Bash. They came through yesterday. There's a contingent of four drives doing a trip through the ranges here. And uh-huh. And this is a property here, I don't know, it'll be about 50,000 acres. So we have muster every morning at 8:30. Map out the day's event and saddle up our horses and off we go.
John, what do you like about riding horses? What do you do for a living?
I'm a developer, so it's very very different, different environment.
And a developer can mean a whole range of things, can't it? But anyway,
land residential land.
Right. Okay. And what do you like about riding horses? What's that do for you?
Oh, I think it's escapism, Macca. Like a lot of things, you look at the amount of grey nomads and people that you talk to are out on the road or out in the bush somewhere. It's a form of escapism to get out of the cities and get in touch with nature, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. And you said there's 91 there. Is that 91 in your horse riders? Or
yeah, there's. Yeah, we've got 90 people at this event, and 65 of them are registered riders. So. And they've, you know, and some of the furthest lot that we've got that have travelled down were come down from Queensland to this event. So a lot of them, you know, they'll load their horses up and they'll come down and they'll do, you know, the event up at Tolangata and then make their way, you know, whilst they're down at this part of the world and take in a couple of other events, including the 10-day ride over here at the moment.
Tell me, it sounds a lovely place to be. I've been to Oahu. Tell me, how's the developing game going? And if you're developing residential land, you should be busy as a whatever.
It's certainly better in Queensland than what in Victoria is. It's just, you know, it's the economic affordability at the moment, and you know, you talk about uncertainty, and there's certainly levels of uncertainty in terms of the, you know, where banking finance and the availability of finance at the right rates and that. So all these things are having an impact on people's negativity.
Yeah. And what, you're based in Queensland, are you?
I'm from Melbourne. I'm from down at Queenscliff, to be exact. My business is in Melbourne, but I'm from Queenscliff. But we've got people here from, you know, we've got from country Victoria, from you know, out in the riverlands of South Australia, and as far north as I said, Queensland up on the coast.
Well, I'm glad you're getting a bit of you time, John. Work-life balance. Everybody's talking about. I don't know where mine is, but
this is pretty healthy work-life balance out here, Macca. Watching the sun come up, having a cup of coffee, and listening to you on a Sunday morning at 6 a.m. We all set our watches, our alarm clocks this morning to get up and watch the sun come up around the fire.
Lovely thing to do, mate. Lovely thing. We should all do that. Lots of people ring here who are doing that sort of stuff. I think to make us feel, yeah, we need. Get our lives in order. But
well, it's how you rediscover yourself, isn't it? To get out here and do, it's the simple pleasures that give us the most contentment.
I think, yeah, you're exactly right. And sometimes it's a bit hard to do that. I mean, yeah, you just, something usually needs to happen in your life if you're wedded to work, which I sort of am in some sort of silly way.
Yes.
Something needs to happen in life, and things are happening to my body that haven't happened before. So, you know, you start to think about those things.
I understand that. Yeah. I'm 65 now, Macca, and I start getting off the horse after a 30K ride, and I feel a little bit older than 65 some days.
It's like the lady who gets out of the ball bars at the Pillager, and she feels like she's 21, and then 2 hours later she feels like she's 75 again. Yeah.
But all comes good about sunset when you sit by the campfire and open another bottle of red.
Yeah. Good on you, John. Great to talk
good
to you,
mate. Good on you, Macca. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
It's a pleasure. Bye. My guest is Kieran Kelly this morning. Kieran sits here and smiles and giggles when he hears blokes like John. Great. I love talking to people here in the morning. It's very addictive, and I get lovely mail and stuff about all sorts of stuff. Most of the listeners are just lovely, and they want to share things, and I just think it's wonderful. I mean, Kieran, I don't know, because I'm just...
Well, there's something. How often do you get to listen to an 8-year-old boy recite In Flanders Fields? That's wonderful.
Yeah, and
there'd be so many people out there crying. I'm a grandparent myself, and it made me cry.
Yeah, he's just a little Will.
Yeah.
Little Will. And he said, I made my grandpa cry. And I said, little grandpas will do that.
Yeah.
Now tell me, I don't know where to start with you. Pan Pacific Games, what's that got to do with anybody here? What's going on there?
Oh, well, it's a Masters Games for people over 35. It has a range of sport that people can go in.
And you're going in it?
I'm going in it for
When's
the first
it on?
Time. It's on in November on the Gold Coast.
This is a precursor to the Games in 32, isn't it? The Olympics, yeah.
I don't know. But people come from all around the world, I'm told, and it's a very popular event, and I've put my name...
So you'll be swimming, of course.
No, well, I'm not. I'm going up for the boxing. So... I put my weight name down for the cruiserweight over 61s. Cruiserweight's 80 kilos. And I'm in the cadet division, which is for people who are having their first tournament bout. So I'm in the middle of training at the moment. I'm very tired. But it's marvellously
stimulating. Why, Kieran, why?
Because older people have to be stimulated to...
This is like your swim last week.
Yeah, the wait for age. So I started the wait for age entirely to encourage older people to keep swimming and keep exercising. So I find boxing is a great mental challenge, tremendous mental challenge to try and learn. And it's a great physical challenge as well to try and get someone my age fit enough to be able to actually do it. So I'm enjoying it. I'm meeting new people. I've got something to aim for in November. And why not? You know, that's the question I ask myself. There's a marvellous fellow called Brian Davidson who did the Wait for Age this year at 89, and I want him to be the first person to start the event as a 90-year-old.
Wow.
And next year...
Do you wear a thing, like a thing on your head when they're boxing? Because I think they do at the Olympics, don't they? Like a
In the bout you do.
Yeah.
Not when you're training.
No, and have you cop one on the nose, have you?
I cop one in the jaw yesterday that woke me up. But that's all part of it. Copping one on the jaw in boxing and complaining about it, it's a bit like going skiing and complaining because it's cold. You know, that is, it's all part of it. It's part of the idea is you don't get hit in the jaw. So, look, these are all great challenges.
This is a fitness challenge for you,
isn't
it? Oh,
absolutely.
And it's very hard, I know.
I don't think I trained this hard for schoolboy rugby in high school. I think we're training harder than that. You've virtually got to train every day. You've got to do something every day. And skipping, I've got to learn to skip. And Bill Tem, the trainer, he likes to drive people when they skip. He said it's vital for your coordination and your health and your fitness. So I'm learning to do a whole lot of things I otherwise wouldn't do. And in the wait for age, I'm encouraging people in their late 80s to keep swimming. And I say to myself, why not?
Why not? Why exactly? Not? Our intrepid journey around Australia in 44 days in a seaplane. Michael Smith is on the line. Where are you, Michael? Good morning.
Good morning. We've arrived in Carnarvon, in WA. And it's been a great week since we spoke last week. I was leaving Cullumbaroo last Sunday and have now flown through the Kimberley. And that was a magical day. It was about 5 hours of flying along a coastline that just keeps, awe-inspiring and changing. But I got to the Horizontal Falls, which is quite famous, and where the water gets trapped inside between the rocks and races out in this crazy amount of water just rushing through this gap. And flying over that was really quite spectacular. I was lucky I was the only one there when I arrived. And then I flew over something really bizarre. As I left that, about 10 minutes later, I saw this something odd on the horizon and thought, what on earth is that? And flew over. And right next to the waterline, there's actually an island. I think it's Coolin Island, is a mine where there is a hole about 500 deep. I have no idea what they're mining there, but it's that was kind of weird. But the thing that really amazed me about the Kimberley was it actually reminded me of the Greek islands or the Croatian islands or that Mediterranean area where it was so beautiful. The big difference, of course, was no one's living there and hasn't been developed. We're so lucky to have kept it so pristine, other than the odd mine. But,
yes, the colour's very different than Greek islands.
Kieran Kelly talking. Yeah, go on.
I just found the Kimberleys every time I've been there. It's the colour of the rocks, particularly at sunrise and sunset, that is magnificent. It's different than the Aegean, which is a softer. I know what you mean about the colour of the water, but I just find the colours in the Kimberleys are quite unique.
Yeah. Well, especially with those reds, because the thing that we have is, we go from beautiful rolling sandy beaches to, really dramatic rocky edges. And then all of a sudden you'll get this red dirt right on the edge of the water with, cliff faces. And when that, like you say, when the late afternoon sun hits that, it is stunning.
Yeah.
But,
Michael, really I've got an email here in front of me from Pam. It says, Pam, is it Pam? I'm not. She says, heard about the proposed restrictions to Lake Eyre Access to Lake Eyre on today's shows and wondering whether people are aware that access to horizontal falls, and you were just talking about that, and I think Montgomery Reef in the Kimberley is ceasing when lease expires in 2026 and in 2028 for the seaplane business. Is this another example of us being restricted? I've seen.
Well, that sounds crazy.
Yeah, well, that's anyway, I just thought you'd be interested. So maybe the only way to see it would be in a seaplane, if that comes to pass, apparently.
Well, I'll definitely follow up what's happening with that, because I was really lucky that when I got to Broome, the guys from Horizontal Seaplane business this is the thing that just keeps amazing me as I travel around. I mean, I've never met these guys. I land at the airport, they wave me over to their hangar and actually help wash the plane for me and put my plane in the hangar because I was there for two nights. And same thing when I got to Carnarvon, the lady there, Margaret, called me a week before saying, right, you're coming to Carnarvon, I'm going to get everything organized. And sure enough, I arrive, she's organized a hangar for me, she hands me a t-shirt with bananas on it, and they're proud of their bananas. Yep. And
aren't we all?
Yeah, but it says go bananas in Carnarvon. And but she'd actually gone and made a t-shirt that actually had a picture of my aeroplane on it, and with welcome to Carnarvon sort of on it. And so the people are just amazing as you're traveling around, the way that they actually, with 100 years ago when Goble and McIntyre arrived in Carnarvon, they landed on an area of water called the Fascine, and I landed on this strip of water as well, and it's a beautiful foreshore. They've put a huge amount of civic work into making it really nice. I was just going to say, yes, I landed on the water, but when 100 years ago when Goble and McIntyre landed on the water, they actually got it a little bit wrong and got stuck on a sandbar and had to wait for the tide to come up. Uh-huh. And so the members of the local yacht club chugged out there in a boat and with a bottle of whiskey for them. But which I thought was pretty generous. Yeah. But anyway, the members of the local yacht club came and had dinner with me, so that was nice. And anyway, it's a great little town. And
where are you off to now? Where's your next leg, and how far into it? What, you've been 3 weeks? Is it 3 weeks you've been into it?
This is now the fourth week.
Fourth week.
And 2 weeks to go, and the next stop is Perth.
44 days, wasn't it, around Australia? Yes. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
In a seaplane. So next stop, Perth, and you're going to stop on the way down, or?
I have to go. They stopped at Geraldton to refuel, so I'll do a quick stop there, and then landing on the Swan River, which is going to be exciting, right next to the CBD, which will be quite a sight.
And you can go and have a look at the memorial there to the HMAS Sydney in Geraldton. It's very impressive, very impressive.
Oh, I didn't know about that one. Thank you.
That's all right, Michael. You just keep in touch, mate. Anything to help.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right, mate.
We'll chat next week.
Yeah. Good. Nice to talk to you. See you, mate.
Okay. Bye. See you, mate. Bye.
Tim's in Camperdown. Morning, Tim.
Morning, Mac. How are you, mate?
Good. Is this Tim? Is this Camperdown in Victoria or Camperdown in Sydney?
Camperdown in Victoria.
Uh huh. What's happening in Camperdown?
Very little. Sleepy Sunday morning. I'm just, the weather's beautiful, about 10 degrees, light winds, a few clouds, and I'm just on my run around the world, and I'm just running through Western Victoria.
Of course, yeah. Nothing's much happening. I mean, every day, and I'm just running around the world. Give me a break. What do you mean you're running around the world?
So I left Brisbane 519 days ago. In an attempt to be the eighth person ever to run around the world. I'm 24,000 kilometres in, and I have to do another 2,500 to finish. And the finish line will be back in Brisbane.
It's not 24,000 k's from Brisbane to Camperdown. Did you go via Singapore or something, did you?
I ran the length of New Zealand. I ran across the United States. I ran across South America. I ran across Britain. I've run across Europe and then ran across Asia, and now I landed in Perth, and I'm just following the southern coastline of Australia back home and finish.
Did you run across anybody interesting?
Plenty of interesting people. Yeah, I've met some really interesting folk along the way and some great people along the way. It's been a hell of a ride, a hell of a journey, that's for sure.
Timmy, and how's the body holding up, mate?
It's not too bad. I've had a lot of pain through some stages of it, but it's good now. I'm hoping that adrenaline kicks in as I get closer and closer to the finish line.
Tim, I'm always interested. Like I spoke a little while ago to Kathy. She was in Lonnie, and she's just on the conservation area there, having a nice time catching fish. And she's been there for 4.5 months, and she's taken. How long have you been doing this?
I left home on the 3rd of December, 2022.
So how come your boss gave you time off?
So I am lucky enough to work for myself.
You must be a financial advisor then, are you?
No, if you knew me, I'm far from that. I just pinched every penny and just wanted to go on an adventure.
Jess is in Lee Point. Good morning, Jess.
Good morning, Macca. How are you going?
Good, thank you. Where's Lee Point for the rest of us?
So Lee Point is just 15 minutes from Darwin CBD. It's on the point of Darwin that is absolutely spectacular. It's actually a internationally significant area for migratory shorebirds and is a place of just absolute unparalleled biodiversity in, proximity to Darwin.
Right, yep.
Yeah.
And what's happening there?
Well, unfortunately, I just want to talk more about its beauty because it is probably the last remaining, savanna woodland corridor that stretches from, northern Australia to the tip of Darwin. So it means, if you've been to Darwin, I imagine you have. There's birds everywhere in Darwin and everyone's backyard, and that's in a large part due to Lee Point because it really allows them to get to those northern suburbs. There's actually 260 bird species that are found within the area. So it's a pretty rare thing. But unfortunately this week, Defence Housing Australia have been trying to develop the area for over 20 years, but most of that was done behind the scenes with deals with the NT government. And only in the last 5 years has the community really been informed of that. And unfortunately this week, despite their best efforts, they've managed to hold off the development for 2 years now. Defence Housing Australia brought in bulldozers probably a few weeks after the community had just found out that a cultural heritage application was rejected. So it's a pretty hard week at Lee Point. We've got about 30 to 50 hectares of trees that have just been bulldozed with a chain.
And what are they putting in? What are they putting there?
So they're putting in defence housing. Unfortunately, back when it was initially planned by Labor in 2009, there was meant to be some of that housing was meant to go for social housing and then the rest would be the defence. But now we know that the majority of those houses are actually allocated to be sold on the private market and only 25% of those houses will actually go to ADF members. See, the thing is that these houses are on the coast, so it's probably quite profitable to make and sell beautiful coastal homes. But unfortunately, that land was public land less than 20 years ago. DHA is a statutory body that is taxpayer funded. And so unfortunately, we've had to pay for the destruction of an area that is desperately loved by a community in Darwin and really across Australia.
Well, Jess, it's a miserable story. I don't know what else I can say, but thanks for alerting the rest of Australia to it. Our environment needs to be protected within reason. So, look, I'm not sure. Yeah. I haven't been out to Lee Point. I've been to Darwin many times, but I haven't been for a while.
If you'd like to come, they've just cleared stage two, and they've actually cleared stage three, which we didn't think they had approval to do, which is quite concerning for a body that large. But if you ever come down, there's many stages to go, so there's still beautiful trees there and there's very much hope in the community. There are thousands of people across Australia that have been doing everything they can to save this area.
First I've heard of it, Jess. I've heard of it. First of all.
I'd love to tell you more about it, Matt, if you're ever in town. I also just want to say that I listen to you every Sunday morning with my dad growing up, so it's a pleasure to speak to you.
Thanks, Jess. Good on you and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Hi, g'day, Macca. This is Jeff from Bogo, New South Wales.
Hi, Jeff.
Yes, I was just ringing up to tell you about the passing of my old mate and travel companion Terry D'Amico, who you interviewed last year about his book, The Great Cactus Wars. And I was planning to do a trip with him. He's originally from America, and he's lived in Australia off and on for about 40 years. And I first met him years ago. He's got an interesting backstory. He came out here in the 80s to study kangaroos, and at that time there was a proposal to ban kangaroo harvesting or shipment of kangaroo products to America, called the Morazzi Bill. And Terry came out here to investigate. He was hired to come out and investigate whether it was a sustainable industry, and I got to know him in that way. And he ended up writing a book on kangaroos. He's written about seven or eight other books, and I helped him with his cactus book. And we had a great time doing trips around outback Queensland and seeing the cactus infestations and everything else. So, yeah, he was a good mate, and very sad that he's passed.
I spoke to him, didn't I?
You interviewed him about his book last year.
And now he
passed last week. As I said, we're planning to do a trip. He was heading back to, he's got family in Washington State and Alaska, and I was actually half planning to do a trip, and we're going to go up the Inside Passage and to visit his family up in Alaska this coming August, and of course that's no longer to be, of course. He was a good mate, and I did hundreds of camping trips with him, many, many camping trips with him around all over Australia, and he was a fantastic biologist. And he was recently working in Western Australia, living over near Geraldton at Dongara. And he worked for the Northern Agricultural Catchments Council as a director, like it's a kind of volunteer position. And he was already investigating, found new plant species. He was proposing for a new nature reserve there. And real enthusiastic, absolute, keen biologist. He was a real amazing character and a great raconteur with his stories of all his adventures.
We went out to Roma about 3 or 4 years ago. For some reason we were out there, and I just noticed all the prickly pear and cactus out there. Not like it was back in the days when a drover had to stand on top of his horse to see where he was, for God's sake, because it was...
Oh, yeah.
And so it's a great Australian story, isn't it? And look...
It is a fantastic story, yeah. I think he's, his insight... He was actually doing the book on kangaroos back in the 80s and early 90s when he saw this all this cactus, and he noticed the hall and chinchilla, the cactus hall there, which is dedicated to the cactus.
Cactoblastis Hall, yeah.
And it intrigued him, and he started his sort of research then. But he's done other things. He wrote a book on Tasmanian tiger as well, and he's written heaps of other stuff. On bears was his best-selling book he sold around the world. He sold hundreds of thousands of copies of that with it. On the great bears of the world.
Yeah, bears are lovely. I haven't seen that book. I'll have to look at that. Bears are lovely.
Yeah.
But they brought out the cactoblast cochineal for the dyeing of the red coats and stuff for the army and all that sort of stuff back in the colonial days.
And
then they made jam out of it and all that sort of stuff. And then it took off, and just great swathes of certainly Queensland and other places.
Northern New South Wales, yeah.
Were unusable, and I sort of noticed much more than I thought I would driving out to Roma the other day, when I say the other day, a couple of years ago, that there was quite a bit of it still around.
Oh, still a lot around. In fact, there's some new varieties up there that they're kind of worried about. Some ropey sort of cactuses and that. We went to one place, we went visited a place out of Longreach there, and... The guy, they'd sprayed some heavy-duty chemicals on these hillsides there, and all the gidgee trees were dead, and the cactus was still thriving up through the through the gidgee, which was pretty sad to see. That's tough stuff anyway.
It's a lesson, isn't it? Yeah. You turn around and one of your mates is, all of a sudden, they're dead. They're gone.
That's right, yeah.
And that happens to me a lot here because I talk to lots of people, and... And
we're sort of all in that age group, Macca, aren't we?
Oh, not me. A lot of us are. A lot of people. I'm fine. Jeff, so you're in Brogo this morning.
That's right. Yeah, on a couple of acres here. Yep. We haven't had much rain here. It's been only light rain here. We were expecting more, but that often happens here. We're a bit of a rain shadow in the Bega Valley, and so often there's big rains up north, down Wollongong to Batemans Bay and that, and then fizzles out sort of around, you know, in a room or something. We get nothing here, or very little. We've had a little bit of rain yesterday, but nothing. We did get some good rain in February, and yeah, then we've had dry patches in between. But anyway, it's still pretty green, so that's all right.
Good on you, Jeff. Thanks for that news. I'll go back and browse through Terry's book, which is called The Great Cactus War, isn't it?
The Great Cactus Wars, yeah.
Yeah, yep. Great Cactus Wars. A lovely, a great Australian story that more of us should...
It is a great story, and he was still to write more. But anyway, not to be. Okay. Thanks, Macca.
Thanks, Jeff.
Good morning, Macca. It's David and Debbie Wilson. We're on the air highway. We're coming close to Cocklebitty heading east. So we're heading over east, so to speak. That's what us West Australians say. We've just come through the 90-mile straight. It's been raining, but it's, beautiful morning here now. Mm. Yeah, so...
And you're on holes, are you, David?
Yeah, we're heading over to Adelaide first, and then we're going to eventually go to Queensland as well. Yeah, we're just on. We love our drive trips, and we've been enjoying these sort of trips for many a year, and we're at the age now where we can do a bit more of it. The kids are all growing up.
How long's a drive trip for you, Dave and Debbie?
Maybe 4 or 5 weeks. Yeah, sort of. We travel a fair. You know, we travel pretty fast and light. We've just got the ute, and we got a camping outfit. But these days, we often stay in hotels and stuff. You know, it's sort of like we plan to camp, but we don't camp as much as maybe we should.
Oh, well, depends what you like to do, I suppose, Dave.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a long day, and then you get tempted by a nice place, and then you think, oh, maybe we'll camp tomorrow night. But we're getting close to Cocklebitty, and we're getting close to our bacon and egg sandwich, which is something we try to rate everyone's bacon and egg sandwiches, and something we look forward to every morning, just about anyway.
I'll say. All right. So you're just off the 90 mile now, and you're near Cocklebitty. Is that the story?
Yeah, that 90 mile straight. Yeah, so we're looking forward to getting onto the Nullarbor, which apparently is really green, and it's pretty nice, the country here at the moment too. It's a lot greener than Perth at the moment. You know, Perth has really suffered a lot with this summer, and it's interesting to talk about that because we've lost so many trees in the suburbs. And
that's what I hear. That's what people have told me the last couple of weeks. And I've noticed that because I always watch what's happening. And Perth has had a really, really hot summer, haven't they? No rain, really.
We've had a bit longer, I think, but we've had a little bit of rain recently, and that was a godsend, and that was great. You feel the bush, you know, taking a bit
sighing.
Of a sigh of relief.
Sigh of relief.
Hopefully they can take the rain up through their leaves. I believe they can do that, some trees anyway, but we could do with a whole lot more. But there's dry seeding going on, and it's, you know, we come through the wheat belt as we travel, you know, towards Coolgardie and Norseman, and then on to Balladonia, where we stayed there last night, where the Skylab come down many, many years back. And so it's been good so far. And
well, dry seeding and hoping that the usual rains that come to the west in winter come.
Yeah. That's right. Usually it does. The trucks have been really good. They're coming east, you know. It's coming from the east to Western Australia, and it's just a reminder of how important our air highway is, and how sometimes it gets blocked And it's another reminder that we possibly could do with another sealed route to Western Australia. But it's exciting. It never loses its charm, getting out on the road. And you know, we listen to your show most Sundays, and this is the first time I've ever considered ringing in, and it's been quite nerve-wracking, to be honest.
Well, it hasn't been too bad, Dave. It's been it's been nice, and from my end, I hope you've enjoyed it too.
Thanks.
And it's always nice to talk to people, and you know, when I hear that, I just put myself back then when I've been around, you know, Eucla or Cocklebiddy or Balladonia or somewhere, or Air Peninsula, you're there down there at the Air Bird Observatory. There's all lovely places along there, and it just gives you a sense of how big the world is, let alone Australia.
Yeah. Well, we're hoping to make it to Ceduna today.
Yeah.
And that'll be good. So, thanks so much for taking my call.
It's a pleasure, Dave. You keep in touch. I'll bump you sometime.
Righto. All the very best.
Thanks very much, mate.
Good morning, Macca. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Yeah, Greg here, mate, from Northern and Western Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And just over the last few weeks, and even this morning, there's been people talking about Villers Bretonneux in France, in the Somme Valley in France.
Mm-hmm.
And 2011, my wife and I, we did a road trip around France, or around Europe. She did her PhD on Australian war history, and she wanted to go and visit all the World War I battlefields and all the Commonwealth War cemeteries, that sort of thing. We done the thing at Ypres, at Menin Gate. But talking about Villers Bretonneux, she wanted to find the school, you know, the Australia school in Villers Bretonneux. You're aware of what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Anyway, so we're driving around, and we couldn't find it, and we're at an intersection in the village of Villers Bretonneux, and there was a lady with her shopping walked across the intersection in front of us, and I rolled the window down. Excuse me, I said, could you direct us to where the school is? And she said, you wait here a minute, couple of minutes. And she walked on, and my wife and I looked at each other, and I watched her in the mirror, and she walked up the footpath behind us and into a property. And then a moment later, car reversed out and come around past us, tooted the horn as she went past us on the intersection, and led us around to the school. And as we got to the school, she put her arm out the window and pointed and waved and kept going, and we never got to thank her for directing us to the school.
Well, you think she might be listening this morning? No, she won't be. But anyway, yeah, so what was that like, going to the school? Good?
Oh, that was excellent. You know, like, it was on a weekend. I think it was a Saturday, so there was no school. So, and the school grounds is open, you know, you can just sort of walk through there. And, you know, we found the courtyard there, or the playground, whatever you want to call it, and, you know, where it's got, you know, Do Not Forget Australia.
Yeah.
And, my wife and I, we thought that was pretty special, you know. But, you know, we went to all the battlefields, you know, through the Somme Valley and Fromelles, and all through Ypres, and all the Commonwealth War cemeteries.
And it pulls you up, doesn't it? Pulls you up when you see all that.
Oh, we even went through Auschwitz and Birkenau, yeah. Poland.
Poland.
Yeah, and that really gives you something to think about.
I'll say.
Yeah.
Now, so, Greg, what do you do? You're in Northern now. What do you do? You're a trucker.
I'm a road train driver, yeah. I've just pulled in to drop off my third trailer. And head into Perth and get another load and go somewhere else.
Carrying what, Greg?
I carry cement and lime.
Mm. So you're busy? Must be busy.
Oh, yeah, I'm like a one-armed bricklayer in Beirut, yeah. You know, like, they can get pretty busy sometimes, can't they?
I'll say. So you, do you come across the paddock in your truck, or mostly around the west?
No, around the west, I refuse to drive over into cross the border into South Australia anymore with all the crap that we've got to put up with the transport authorities on that side of the on that side of the nation. Yeah. Over here, the transport authorities are realistic and you have flexibility and you don't get hassled. You know, if you do something wrong, or you do something wrong, or you cop it. But over there, you know, like, they just hammer you. And I can't understand why anybody wants to do east-west anymore or drive on the eastern states. I refuse to.
Well, that's the way. Good on you, Greg. Nice to talk to you, mate. I'll have to do what you did one day. I've never been to the Western Front, but I'll have to do that. It's
It was excellent, you know, because my wife done her PhD on it, and she'd done all the research, and she knew where to go and the whole lot, you know.
Yep.
And and she ended up writing a book about the Australian Fleet Air Arm.
Oh yeah.
You know, the Australian Fleet Air Arm, that's the flying component of the Navy.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so she's just published, that got published late last year.
Called, what's it called?
It's called Birdies. Uh-huh. Birdies is the nickname for the naval pilots.
And that's down on the south coast of New South Wales, down on...
Albatross.
Yeah, Albatross, yeah.
It's like the home of, but you know, this is an Australia-wide thing, you know, like.
Yep.
And the Fleet Air Arm is still pretty busy around the world today. They don't have fixed-wing aircraft like they used to then. They mainly have just helicopters these days. But they are still very active, you know.
Yeah.
And, all right.
Sorry, Greg. Yeah. As I said, I'll have to do it. Good on you, Greg. Nice to talk to you, mate.
All right. See you, Macca. Bye.
See you, mate. Bye.
Hi, Macca. It's John speaking from Melbourne. I just rang up to share with you a most wonderful dawn service I went to at Gundagai last week.
Right.
I'd been there a few years before by accident, just because I was driving up and down to Sydney to visit one of my daughters that's escaped from Melbourne a couple of years ago.
Is that what do you escape from Melbourne?
Well, I don't go to see her. I go to see my grandchildren. But the Gundagai service was... The president of the RSL there had been doing it for 16 years and it was his last year. I didn't know that, but I organised my trip to go. And it's in the river flats of the Murrumbidgee there, and it's just so moving. They lost so many men on the Western Front, and they were all light horsemen. And they have a light horse reenactment. They fire a three-gun 303 salute. They raise every bird out of the riverbed, and it's just the most moving ceremony.
It's a great town, Gundagai. I'll have to go to that dawn service. We'll have to do a program in Gundagai. We need to go everywhere, and we'll come down to Melbourne too. John, whereabouts in Melbourne do you live?
In Malvern.
Do I dare to ask you what your football team is?
Your football team. My football team's the Bulldogs, lifetime. Brought up in Kyneton. 2016, the greatest 1st of October in my life.
They're struggling this year. Good on you, John. Great to talk to you, mate.
Thank you.
And Tim, dear old Tim in Camperdown running around the world. What did you make of that, Kieran? You should be...
Made me feel tired.
Yeah, well, you're tired because you've been boxing, because Kieran's going in the Pan Pacific Games. Kieran, the economy and interest rates are always on our mind. The last time I spoke to you was about where you had a go at Donald Trump. Why do you think people like Donald Trump? You know, because you told me the story about your mate, and he says, oh, well, don't worry, you'll have a Donald Trump. He won't be Donald Trump or even Donald Trumpish, but... there'll be some Americans like him.
Yeah.
This is my take. They like Donald Trump because he's not woke and they are really anti-woke. So anybody who's sick of all the rules and regulations and the people who are against free speech, that's what they think. And that's why they're not for any good cogent reason, because they don't like the other
last
people.
Last time I was over there, I went to what's called an in-town by a lady called Nikki Haley, who was running against Donald Trump for the Republican nomination. I went with a friend of mine who was a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, comes from an old Democrat family, so it'd be the equivalent of a staunch Labor man. We went along, and it was in a town that's the equivalent of, I suppose, of Orange or Albury or Tamworth, maybe. Country people, townies, ranchers, people with big hats, etc. Anyway, Nikki Haley got up, and she started to talk, and she sounded like a middle-of-the-road, very sensible Republican, believed in American values, in maintaining alliances and things like that. And I looked around and I thought to myself, this isn't resonating with this crew, this crowd, and they're just middle Americans. Anyway, I looked over at my friend. He was sitting next to me and he just shook his head. And I thought, oh, dear, something's gone terribly wrong. Anyway, when we went outside, he said, so how do you think that went? And I said, well, it sounded very sensible to me. If she was in Australia, she'd probably get elected. And he said, nah, she talks like a politician. And I said, mate, she's running for the highest office in the land.
She's a politician.
She's got to sound like a politician. And he said, we don't want to hear from politicians anymore. They talk out both sides of the mouth at the same time.
So that's
no
the
one
deal.
Trusts them. So I walked over to this crowd. I thought, well, I'm going to test this.
As you
thesis.
Do, yeah. As Kieran
so
Kelly
there's a
does.
bunch of blokes standing there with their wives, and I picked them as farmers. Farmers you can pick anywhere. So I walked over and I said, you know, introduced myself. I'm from Australia. What did you blokes think about that? And they just shook their heads. He said, she's talking about foreign alliances and I'm worrying about the cost of diesel fuel for my tractor. And then this lady said to me, and we can't afford to go shopping in town anymore. And she didn't talk about the cost of living. So it was like their issues are down here at the local level and she's talking very sensibly about budget deficits and foreign alliances. Mm. And it's just,
but they don't want to talk. See, politicians don't want to talk about that because there's nowhere they can. They don't. They know. I assume they know that times are tough for people and housing and rent and cost of living. And you've talked about it before, but
yeah, but that's not what comes across. Now, Nikki Haley's a very sensible person, and I get what she's saying, but she's talking to a bunch of people in Dubbo
that have moved on.
Well, they're under such pressure. This lady said to me, she said, do you know, my family came here 150 years ago and they used to grow all their own vegetables and that because there wasn't a town here when we first settled the area. And she said, now I have to grow my own vegetables because we can't afford to shop in the supermarket and we can't afford to put petrol in the car. So there's just a disconnect. And anyway, when we're driving back to Park City, I said to this friend of mine, now he's dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. You can imagine it. Guy who came from Port Kembla, his family have all voted Labor, and I said, so you know you'll be voting for Joe Biden. He said no. He said I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, and I nearly fell out
off the road. Yeah.
Yeah. So I said, why, mate? And he said, look, it's very simple. Donald Trump hates Washington, and I hate Washington, so we've got a lot in common. Now, this is an intelligent bloke who follows politics closely, and he said what triggered it was picking up the paper 4 days earlier and a couple of contractors, American soldiers, had been killed in Iraq with an Iranian drone strike. Mm. He said, I didn't even know we still had soldiers in Iraq. I'm tired of this, picking up the paper every now and then. He got quite animated about it, seeing Americans dying in places I've never heard of, that are completely irrelevant to us. They've got to stop this. And he said, we're sending $70 billion overseas in this aid package, and we've got all these people homeless on the streets.
Yeah.
San Francisco. He said, you tell me. He said, you were in finance. Why can't $1 billion of that go to helping the homeless?
It's homeless everywhere in on the West Coast, up north,
San Diego, you should see it.
I know.
And I said, I don't know the answer to that, why they can't chip $1 billion off. He said, you could fix that. So these are sensible Americans. A lot of Australians like to think Americans are a bit mad. But you go to one of those in-town meetings and you realise that there's a bit of a disconnect there between Washington and somewhere like...
Tell me about interest rates here in
Well,
Australia.
The government's got a problem. Budget's coming up, as you know. Yep. It's under enormous pressure to do something for people that are under pressure, cost of living, et cetera, but the inflation figures are stuck. The government wants inflation between 2.5 and 3. It at March quarter, it was 3.6 annualised. You might say, well, isn't that good enough? It's 3.6 and their target's somewhere under 3. Unfortunately, the March quarter was 1%. So if you multiply 1%...
That's 4.
That's 4. Mm. So the problem is this last bit of sticky inflation is caused by things like excess government spending, immigration levels too high, low productivity, and the government's sort of wedged in a spot where it's under pressure to increase spending on, you know, welfare for people who are really doing it tough, and at the same time to cut spending and cut immigration and things like this. I don't know what they're going to do.
Mm.
It's almost an impossible juggling act to increase spending for the people who need it and then cut spending somewhere else.
Yeah. All right.
So I don't think rates are going down much more.
No, that's what they seem to say. Kieran, great to talk to you, mate. Lovely. Yeah. Will you give us a... When's the Pan Pacs on? That's what they call them, the Pan Pacs. It's very, very sporting. Yeah, the Pan Pacs, the Pan Pacs are on in November.
Yeah.
So you'll be fighting somebody from what? Just around the Pacific, is it?
They come from all over the world, I think.
Do they?
I don't know yet. I just know that I hope I'll get someone around 80
kilos. Why don't you swim? You're a very good swimmer.
I want to do something a bit different.
Oh, what if you get bounced on the bonko?
Oh, well. I never want to get life.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
It's character building. Can I say before I go, congratulations to the Balmoral Beach Club teams that swam across Lake Argyle.
Lake Argyle.
And thank you to the people of Kununurra for embracing my swim. And
why don't we go next year?
I want to go for the 20th anniversary.
When's that?
2026.
We might be here. You never know. Who knows what's around the corner?
Don't buy green bananas.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.